Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today the interview is with Sky, or AKA Miss Michelle Jones from Chicago, Illinois, who is originally from Chicago, Illinois, I believe, and lives in the state of California. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Okay. So, for the people who are not familiar, Ms. Jones?
Yes, I'm here.
There's some background noise. But for people who are not familiar with Sky, AKA Michelle Jones, she's been on the Ted Mack show. She has an extensive background, performer who studied acting, jazz, dance, hip-hop, ballet, tap, piano, opera, and symphony, vocal technique used by the late, great Michael Jackson. Her mother had a show called Kidding Around that was on WMAQ-TV. She also has met Miss Christine Houston in 2007. I believe she played the role of Sweetie.
Mm-hmm. When I was 10 years old.
10 years old, yes. And it was in the play. But the show was later produced by Miss Marla Gibbs. If some of you are familiar with the Jeffersons Maid and the actress on 227. She has an extensive record. She wrote for the Evergreen, Valley Comic College Times, the South Bay Express, and the Mercury News, Special News of Pride and Pain. Very impressive things that she has did. And she's very well known also for her work. So, Miss Michelle Jones, I've just told everyone as much as I could about you. You're obviously a journalist, a very well-known journalist, dancer, actress, everything. You did everything that some people wish they could do. So, the first thing I would like to talk about, how, as a journalist, great journalist, actress, how did you go for all that talent and all those lessons? And knowing all those different people and writing for all these different newspaper prestige, just newspapers and people, how did you become Miss Wheel for a short time?
How did I become what?
Mentally ill.
Oh, okay. All right, let me tell you. Well, what happened is I was writing because I also was a promotional model. It was my way of getting through college. I was an artist originally, And I did all those things. I had my own concert, my first concert when I was 6 years old, 10 years old, I performed at the Petrello Show. My mom was my manager, and she was a visionary. And so we came to California to pursue my dreams of being a professional artist because we wanted to go to L.A. We ended up being in San Jose, California. So I did a lot of things. I worked with San Jose Children's Musical Theater, Theater Works, San Jose Civic Light Opera.
Oh, my. Oh, yes. And you also have interviewed so many people, Ahmad Rashad, Brian Allen.
Yes.
Jimmy
yes.
Jones, Montel Williams,
yes.
Debbie Reynolds, Dick Van Dyke,
yep.
Donald O'Connor, so many.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get that in? Yes, ma'am.
Well, so what happened is I did those things, and I got into motivational speaking because I had injured my voice as a journalist. I was originally going to be a singer. And so my mom, I heard my voice because of all the musical theater and singing too loud because you work with a lot of different vocal teachers and the technique wasn't right. And you're working with directors that want you to be loud, and I got vocal nodules. So I thought that my dream was over. But around that time, I got with a record label called Stone Records with Mel Lewis, the late Mel Lewis. And I got to open for people like Debbie Deb, Rojas, Rodney Ojo Cooley, Afro Rican, and I was doing all these things. And so
yes,
because
ma'am.
My voice was injured, and who else?
It's feeding.
Yes.
You're
so because
feeding.
I injured my voice, I went back to school. Because I did not have my high school diploma at that time because I was going to take the SAT. I was going to take that. There's a test you take to get out of high school early when you're working in the arts because I was working as an artist. And the principal was going to let me out of school. So, but when I injured my voice, that was it. So I went back to school. I went to Evergreen Valley College, and that's when I started working for the Evergreen Valley College Times. I wrote for Tommy Fulcher's South Bay Focus. And I worked, that's when I began studying with Rocky Fagundes, Keith Banks, and Darlene Thorne as a dancer because I had hurt my voice, so I was trying to use my body because I was trying to find something else to do, you know, because I was broken. So I continued on, and I ultimately met Chauncey Bailey. I'm jumping ahead because I'm missing some stuff, but I was brought to him because I was a promotional model. And I worked with a lot of liquor companies, energy drinks, Power Bar, Axe deodorant, Unilever, all this stuff. So I drove all over the Bay Area as a hostess and a promotional model. Well, I met a gentleman named Derek Nesbitt who took me to Chauncey Bailey. And when I met him, he said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to have my own entertainment column." Boom, he gave it to me. I said, "What else do you want to do?" I said, "I want to have a TV show." Boom, I had Skyline TV. He was a very kind man, and he was assassinated in 2007. We hadn't had a journalist killed in this country since 1983. And so when that happened to me, he was such a mentor and such a great man, it caused a psychotic break, and I became bipolar. I grieved too deeply, you know. And so I was unable to, I had always supported myself. I had had an office, a modeling company at the Black Chamber of Commerce as part of the Incubator Project. I had my own apartment for about 12 years, and boom, suddenly I couldn't support myself, and I became homeless.
Okay. But this is kind of like success and trials and tribulations of your life.
Yes.
So how did you learn to cope with being bipolar?
Well, the blessing, my mother got sick right around the time that I was bipolar. And I went to get her from the psychiatrist because I was living alone in San Jose. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what was wrong with me. So I went to get my mother, and she ran away from me And when they got her, when I had to do a missing persons report, so the police picked her up and put her in a psychiatric hospital. So I was mentally ill trying to get my mother out of to care of her, to bring her back to live with me, and I was unable to do it. So that was devastating. But what happened is my life in the arts, my life as an arts educator, my life as a journalist, as an actress, as a motivational speaker, I kept having dreams. And I had had such a happy childhood. My mother wanted the best for me. She gave me all those lessons. She struggled to pay for them. She was an accountant. She was a comms controller, you know. And that and God gave me the strength to make it through that. Because sadly, when Chauncey died, there were 1,200 people that came to his funeral. But the city of Oakland did not embrace me. I fell. I tried to use resources like deposit assistance and rental assistance, but I just wasn't able to do it. I tried to work. I couldn't work, you know, and it just took a while. And a lot of people have told me, why are you saying that you're bipolar? Because there's an actress on Blackish that came out and said that she is bipolar. I take my medication. I take my pills. You know, I found a good doctor, and I'm fine now. You know, I'm back. It took a while, but I'm back. But I would really say I had such a joyous childhood and a life compared to others. So when I became homeless, I got to see what real treachery and sadness was. I hadn't experienced that, and I believe that that's what brought me back.
Okay. All right. So You work with the homeless and to help the homeless. Would you like to talk about that? And I believe Miss Rain's organization.
Well, what happened is I stayed in a boarding care because that's what happens when you're homeless. They pick you out. They picked me out of the emergency psychiatric services because I was very calm, and they only want high-functioning people, and they put me in a boarding care. While I was in the boarding care, I had all these dreams, and the dreams were so exciting. I couldn't wait to go to sleep, and I saw myself doing public speaking and all these things. I believe these were prophecies, and when I worked with a hypnotherapist named Wanda Whitaker, I went under, and that's when my guides and angels told me that I need to do a radio show for the homeless, that I need to use my journalism skills. So I contacted, I'm always on Facebook, so I contacted Larry Chu of Real Time Radio on KPU Radio. I told him my idea, and he immediately put me on, you know. So when I first started doing interviews, it was really hard because homeless people are very scared. They're very hard people to interview because they're very frightened, and they've been done wrong by the press. You know, people come and interview them, and then nothing happens. They think that they're saved when they get an interview, and then nothing happens. And so I did that, and I decided that I was going to start working with ministers and pastors and nonprofits. By doing that, there were homeless people that they serve, and I was able to get interviews through them.
Oh, okay. All right. That is great. You're inspirational, motivational to not only myself, but many other people who will listen to this show, this interview. So I believe you're working with, I believe it's Love Changes the World.
Yes.
Is that the correct? Okay.
Love Changes the World, yes.
Okay. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, there's a lady named Shalette Dewey. She's referred to by Sister Shalette. And I met her when I was homeless. I was working with another charity, and I got to see how she operates. And she has a really great organization. She helps the homeless. She does outreach. She feeds them. She provides donations. She throws events. She's been doing this for years. And so when I told her that I was doing the work with K2 Radio, she thought that it would be a good partnership. And she has been a bit of a mentor to me. And it's just been a really, really positive experience.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. That is very. You're called Sky, and I believe that's your the Sky Report. You also had the Sky Report.
Yeah.
Yes, you created in 2007, I believe, you had the Sky Report. It was like a hip-hop show in Mr. Chauncey Bay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, the Sky Report was basically, I used to listen to a show on KMEL called the Sun and D Report, and that kind of gave me the idea, because I got the name Sky because I was a drama instructor for the Native American group called Ablaza, and they went to the National Black Theater Festival, and while we were there, went to the Grand Canyon. And so they, as Native Americans, they were walking around the rocks on the edges because they don't have any fear. They're very spiritual people. And I did this through Buddy Butler through the McNair Scholars Program. And so I was sitting on the side of a mountain, and that's when the name Sky came to me. At the beginning, there is no beginning, there is no end. The sky is always there. And so that's when I took on the name Sky. And it's a bit of a spiritual name. And so I started the Sky Report because, like I told you, Oakland did not embrace me, sadly. I had my connections, but when Chauncey died, doors closed. So I went to 104.1 KJCC, and I started doing interviews. I was working at the time with a woman named Lee Marie of Vixen Entertainment, an excellent publicist. And she gave me all these interviews, Mano, Jadakiss, Twista, John B., so many interviews that she made possible for me. And so I had celebrities, because I was working with TheExaminer.com at the time. I was a celebrity headlines writer. I handled restaurant reviews, hotel reviews. So I was always out doing things. And so we got the show going. I got a gentleman named Damon Barfield, DJ Roxwell, to be my DJ. And he was on air with me. So I had a DJ, and I operated at a San Jose City College in the studio. We had Dwayne Wiggins come into the studio. We had so many interviews because I used my connections to be able to reach out to the various publications and bring them back to 104.1 KJCC.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. So I know that you're currently living out your mother's dream for you.
Yeah.
By continuing to teach theater art and theater games,
yes,
to severely at-risk and disadvantaged children.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful. Yes, ma'am.
My mother created a company called Totally Talented because I was an artist, and I thought I was going to be a singer. Well, I lost my voice, and then I hurt my back. So I was dancing full-time because I was a lead dancer for Theater Works in Palo Alto, and I got nominated for the Jenny Lynn Award at San Jose Civic Light Opera. So I was dancing. I was a professional cheerleader for the San Jose Rhinestones. I hurt my back. So my mom was like, okay, I was broken. You know, I didn't have my high school diploma, and my whole career was gone. I was like one of those child stars, you know, where you do all this stuff, but you end up with nothing. So thank God I went to school. And I transferred to San Jose State University through the Evergreen Valley College Transfer Program. My mom did all of this for me. So I worked as an arts educator all over the Bay Area. And I worked with Buddy Butler through the McNair Program, Scholar Program. I taught the African American Community Service Agency Summer Program. I taught a Yes Express Program. I taught for Totally Talented, my mom's company, City of San Jose, the Alternative Placement Academy, Mid-Peninsula Girls Club. I taught for Condoleezza Rice and the Center for New Generations.
Just wonderful.
You know, and when I was working,
interviewed Miss Nicki Minaj, Jimmy Rain, and Janet Jackson. And
this is what happened.
Cicely Tyson and Tina Turner, Monique, so many people.
Well, okay, this is what happened. I interviewed Nicki Minaj, and I had a chance to interview Janet Jackson, Cicely Tyson, but I got Monique. So I plan on continuing it. I mean, the list of interviews has been, I've interviewed a lot of people, but I plan on continuing the work because I just found out through KPU Radio I'm going to be able to do my celebrity interviews again. And there's another gentleman with KKUP and KPFA that's going to take my interview. So we are just going.
You're on So what motivated you? What motivated you, to start doing additional things? I mean, you've always did a whole lot and always been successful and stuff with, when you became mentally ill and homeless. So what motivated you to get on the radio again?
Well, I have an amazing fiance, and he helped me so much. And, my mother, I'm creating Trench Advocates to Help the Homeless in my mother's name. She was always there. She's still alive, but she has multiple strokes, and she doesn't talk anymore. So I visit her as much as I can, but this is about keeping her legacy alive, and that wakes me up every day. And I'm so excited. I just had a meeting to look in. I'm going to be looking into doing public speaking at schools and high schools. I'm going to try to contact some of these universities to do some teaching opportunities. The class that I had at the Dr. Martin Luther King Library was called The Sky is the Limit, and I really believe that.
I believe that, too. I believe the sky is the limit for you also. I, too, was a promotional model.
And in a great gig. I loved it. I worked at nightclubs, grocery stores, Costco's, Walmart's, stadiums, basketball stadiums. It's a great gig.
Yes, ma'am. I, too, have acted some bit. I've worked with Ms. Oprah Winfrey and Greenleaf and Mr. Kevin Spacey and Mr. Tyler Perry and Florida State University and just a whole lot of different things. So
yes,
a connection with you.
Well, Debbie Reynolds said it's always nice to receive the late Debbie Reynolds, sadly, is always nice to receive a compliment from a lady. And I will say the same thing to you, because I consider you to be a peer. I celebrate what you do. I think we need to uplift each other as women, definitely, and especially as black women. There's so many challenges that are out there in the business. We have to do everything that we can to support each other as storytellers, as narrators.
But so many black women compete with each other and don't trust each other because of husbands and boyfriends and things.
You're so right.
That way. But I do understand why married women are that way. So they really cannot trust, feel like they cannot trust other women.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it, but it should be that way.
It's sad. It's very sad because we need each other.
Yes. Yes, we do. So when you were homeless, how long were you homeless, Ms. Michelle Jones?
I think it was about between 5 and 6 years. It's taken me that long to get back, to get the right medication and to be able to get back, just have the courage to try. It's just amazing, too, because it becomes, when I decided to do the Skyport Voice of the Homeless, I took it around to all the entertainment companies and celebrity entertainment companies that I knew, and they thought I was nuts. They're like, why would you want to tell that story? You're not going to make any money that way. This isn't good content. But I found a web designer that believed in me, that wanted to help the homeless too, and I invested a little bit of money, and now I have YouTube videos and stuff on a Facebook page. I'm doing a website, and these people are being given their dignity. When I interview them, they learned that the show airs on KP Radio 9 a.m. Saturdays at 9 a.m. every Saturday. It's a 20-minute segment on Larry Chu's real-time radio. So we don't just see them on Christmas and Thanksgiving and decide that we're going to air it then and leave them alone the rest of the year. I am out week after week after week after week trying to get to the bottom of homelessness. And I'm so excited to show them that their work is going to be immortalized. They're happy to be on the radio, but they're even happier that there's an archive where they can keep going back. And so I'm just going to keep approaching stations and see who wants the footage. I'm so thankful that KP Radio is nominating me for a Peabody Award, but I'm going to be trying to reach out to other stations because the issue is larger and we need to look at it globally.
So what have you learned from your own personal experience and other people's experience that causes homelessness?
Well, it's not just for the mentally ill. It's not just for drug addicts. And it isn't that they want to live that way. We are all one paycheck away from being homeless. Nobody wants to address that. I think that's what makes it such a hard issue to address. I talked to one gentleman. I was told about a story about a gentleman who was working as an electrician. He electrocuted himself. As a result, he could not work. There was another gentleman who had elephantitis. He used to work at 7-Eleven, and he had swollen legs, but his legs began to pus and ooze and smell, and so that he couldn't work. So these are people. Another gentleman had a broken back. These are people that became sick, they became ill, or they had family members that died, and they were not able to live with them at their time of need and save money, and they ended up out in the streets. It could happen to anybody.
Yes, it could. I understand what you think. It could be anyone that ends up homeless.
It could be anybody.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, it could be. Very much so. It's sad, but it's true.
Yes.
Okay, so once you got on the right medications and everything, you're doing fine now, obviously, by everything you just said.
Yeah. I talked to my best friend, and he was like, you sound like your old self, and he's so happy. But I'm telling you, I had all these dreams of public speaking, and I believe these were prophecies, and now I'm going in that direction. Am I scared? Absolutely. But there's a thing called a speech outline and note cards and a PowerPoint presentation, and I'm putting that together because people need to hear this story. There are people that are out there struggling, that are giving up. The homeless people in the Bay Area all around us, if they would just know that somebody like them can come back, maybe that will motivate them to keep going and to believe, you know. They need to know the story. Bipolar people need to know that there are people out there that go through the very same thing, but I'm back, you know, and I'm looking forward to a great life.
Yes, ma'am. I've been diagnosed with three mental illnesses. And I understand where you're coming from.
Yes. Well, God bless your heart for doing this.
Yes, ma'am.
Bless your heart for doing this.
Okay. So I'm really impressed by you. I'm going to let you know that once again because I feel a connection with you when you start talking about bipolar. I have never been homeless, but I won't rule it out. Like I said, I have three mental illnesses, so that tells you a lot about me. Understanding of most mental illness when something traumatic happens.
Yes, a traumatic break.
Yeah, and if you go through trauma after trauma, that can cause mental illness too. But one problem can do it also. Yeah. So what happened with Ms. Chauncey Bailey was really traumatic, but I'm glad to know love changes the world. I'm glad you're working on that with Ms. Rain. I think that's wonderful. And Sister Chalette, that's a beautiful thing, what you all are doing.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too, because I never forgot I was working as a personal assistant. And there was somebody that tried to discriminate against me. He said, I don't want to work with nobody bipolar. And I came back at him. People have been like, don't tell people. I'm like, no. There's discrimination out here. People need to realize that you cannot discriminate against people with mental illness. Disabled people have rights, and we have to fight for them.
Yes, we do.
I want people to come out of the shadows. That you can come back. How are people going to ever get better if we don't have role models? You know, Whoopi Goldberg was dyslexic. We need to embrace the things that are wrong with us and share that with people because that makes you even more powerful.
I did not know Miss Whoopi Goldberg was. I did not know that.
Yeah. They do that now. When you look up certain celebrities and things like that, they tell you the things that they've overcome. you know, and we all have things we need to overcome, you know, and I just am so humbled and blessed to be that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I thank you. I did not know that. I did not know that. Okay, so the love changes the world. This is also about homelessness and feeding the homeless. What I'd like to ask, a gentleman that I once talked to from California has said that the homeless, see, he calls it Skid Row. They're in California.
In Los Angeles. Yes.
Yes. All right. So how do you feel about Mr. Stephon Clark and his death out there in California?
Actually, forgive me. I don't know. Stephon Clark. Well, who is that?
Oh, you don't know who I'm talking about? There's a gentleman that was killed in Sacramento, California by two police officers.
Well, I think it's heartbreaking, you know, and it's very sad, you know. And I went through a situation where I was staying in housing, and unfortunately I needed the police because even though they create housing for homeless people, there are some mentally ill people that stay there. And I've learned that these housing companies, organizations, are a little slow to create rules or enforce the rules. So I had somebody that actually attacked me at a place, and I had to move away from it. And because she was mentally ill, no one would do anything. So in regards to it is unrelated, but in regards to Stephon Clark, I think it's horrible. I think it's horrible that our black men are an endangered species and being attacked by the police. And not only that, but something as simple as driving down the street can mean you are a victim of that you're victimized by the police. And this happens to people of color all the time. You don't know what can happen.
Yes, it does. It does. It happened recently to a relative of mine. I'm in the South. I'm not in California. I've never even visited Chicago, Illinois. And I've been to California one time in my entire life. And mm-hmm. in the South, they do pretty much anything they want the police to. They can go into your house,
yes.
get out a warrant, make excuses to go in and stand and smoke alarms, going out to do all kinds of intimidating things and scary things to keep black people in their place. That's what it's
yes.
really about, keeping black
yes.
in the South in their place, you know, so. Understand that about the police and needing to call them and have to call them, but bad things can happen when the police get involved. That's the other side of the coin.
Yes.
So,
I consider myself lucky to live in the Bay. I consider myself lucky to live in the Bay Area because when I went to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, at the National Black Theater Festival, I encountered some real racism. I mean, I was in a restaurant. This man with these pale blue eyes just stared through me. It was horrible. You know, I went to a store and I was looking at the clothes. The lady followed me all over the store, all over the clothing store because she knew I was going to steal from them. And that was not the case. While I was with the Native American theater at the National Black Theater Festival with a Native American group, there was a guy that kept saying the N-word over and over and over again to me. And the people with a blazer, kept saying that, please, Michelle, don't say anything. We're 3 days from home. This man has a gun. We've seen it. Please don't get upset. Please don't get upset. So I can't imagine the amount of racism that you deal with.
It's quite a bit. It's a small southern town, about 30 minutes maybe from the Alabama state line, and there's men that have been in jail 3 years, 3 and 4 years, black people, black men too, who have been in jail and never got a trial. They're still in jail.
Yes.
3 and 4 years. That happens. That's over there in Dothan, Alabama. Bad here.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard this word said to you by a white person?
What, say it again?
Have you ever heard this word, these words said by a white person? I do not want you to race me with any of my children. Have you ever heard it?
I do not want you to. Okay, and you said, I don't want you to.
That's what he told me. He did not want me to race mix with any of his children.
Wow. Wow.
Have you ever
no,
heard
I have not.
Mixing, yeah, I feel I'm almost 50 and I still get that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't hate white people, though. I just accept it as a everyday part of life, different types of discrimination against me because I'm disabled somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
because I'm black and female.
Right.
And I help them different. So I go on. And this show brings me a lot of enjoyment. So.
Yes, and you do a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Stephon Clark, I realized at first you didn't know who I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, sadly. Well, you know what happens? I deeply apologize for that. I have been out of the news. When Chauncey died, there was a way they kept parading his dead body all over the news that was horrible. But I actually backed away from the news because of the trial went on for about a year and a half. So anytime there was any new news about Chauncey Bailey and his murder, they kept showing his dead body zipped up in a body bag. And that was very hard for me. So I backed away from the news. So it's amazing that I'm back doing this type of journalism and I'm having to re-educate myself about the news and get a stronger stomach.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. The criminal justice system is filled with black men and women. So,
yes.
All right. Let's see. I had some more questions about you. I'm glad to know that you're engaged.
Yes.
I have a close significant. Yeah. I'm glad because I know you had told me that you had been engaged, I believe, to Mr. Chauncey Bailey.
Yes, what happened, and this is why it was so hard on me. He had asked me to marry him. I said yes, but there were other women that came up in the news that said that he was their boyfriend, too. So this was heartbreaking, and it was very divisive. And so when the funeral happened, I didn't go. I was actually talking to people at the Post newspaper group. And I proved to them who I was because I had emails from Chauncey. And so it's like he reached through the grave to validate me. A lot of the people that were in the media were like, I don't know these people. I've never seen her before. I was out at interviews and I was out doing interviews and television work with Chauncey in the field. So I was seen. So it was very sad, you know, when all this happened. I was considered to be another girlfriend. People said that Chauncey proposed to quite a few people, dead men tell no tales. So there was no way that I could validate that. And that made it even harder in missing him and grieving him.
Yes, ma'am.
So
I understand that.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. But I thank God that God gave me a new fiance and I have a man in my life and he really motivates me. And that just gave me the spirit to say, you know what? Why not? Why not? If anything, I've come back and I'm stronger now. I'm a survivor. I just had meetings with people that I've known for 20 years. And I'm inside of meetings as I develop this charity. And I don't doubt myself anymore. My father recently passed. And because of the way that I grieved Chauncey, I promised myself I would never do that again. I was able to be with my father in his last moments, and I handled that well because I was not going to go into a deep depression again.
I understand.